At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, he certainly has the passion and the motivation to keep pushing forward. He understands what it would mean to get this team back in the playoffs. I mean, he gets frustrated like everybody else does when certain things happen, but you have seen the impact here. You saw the impact at the end of last season when they started to make some breakthroughs. You see this year, the work they did. You know, training camp was very positive, very upbeat, and then all of a sudden, whack, you're down 0-3 from the start of the season. They didn't expect that.
This episode of Nuff Said with Bob Kuczynski is sponsored by Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant, home of the Spaghetti Parm and located at 291 Seneca Street in Buffalo. Bob's guest on this episode of Nuff Said is veteran Buffalo News reporter Mike Harrington.
Welcome back to Nuff Said with yours truly. My guest today, the Honorable Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News, who is... You talk about a jet setter. So we're taping this, we're recording this Tuesday. And Mike, you were at the pinnacle game seven of the Blue Jays series.
Yeah.
Great comeback. So you got home at about 4 a.m.?
4 a.m.
But you're back at it today. You got a World Series coming up. The Sabres played Monday night. The Bills are off their bye week. They're coming back. They're going to be in Carolina. So we're going to do it in this order. We're going to do Bills, Sabres, Blue Jays, because I'm sure we have some Blue Jays. Well, a lot of people are going to be Blue Jays fans now,
sure.
Right? And they're the parent club to our beloved Buffalo Bisons, so there's a lot going on.
And here's the trivia note, just before you start. 15 members of the Blue Jays ALCS roster played for the Bisons this season.
Wow.
Because of call-ups, whatever, and injury rehab. Springer, Bieber, a lot of these guys were here. Dalton Varsho on injury rehab. So it's just a neat little trivia note that there were that many guys here this year, and they're not from 3, 4, 5 years ago.
So you're saying Mike Wachowski and company may have a rooting interest in this series, right?
I think they do, yeah.
All right, so let's start off with the Buffalo Bills, who caught a break because the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, who are no longer the dismal Carolina Panthers,
no, and
not a bad football team. Price is probably out for the game with a high ankle sprain. And this defense can use all the help they can get.
Well, you know, but here we go. Andy Dalton coming in. Now, you don't want Andy Dalton throwing, you know, some of his miracles against the Bills this time. But here's the thing, is that you start watching, Bob, going forward with the schedule. The schedule's going to get a little tougher. And I've been following this number the last few weeks. Carolina's going to be a tough game on the road. The Bills have 4 wins, okay? You know what the record is of the 4 teams the Bills have beaten?
I think I do, but go ahead.
It's 3-24. Yeah. Baltimore, Jets, Miami, New Orleans, 3-24. So right now, you have to see, are the Bills paper tigers here? When are they going to beat a good football team, and how many good football teams who are remaining on their schedule, and there are a bunch of them, are they going to be able to beat?
So the teams that they had beaten prior to last week's game was still 3. They still only had 3 wins.
Right, right.
So another weekend went by, and none of those teams picked
the
up
the Ravens
win.
Were on the bye, so the other 3 all lost.
All right. Mike, I'm going to take a timeout, mm-hmm. because this is something I forgot to do last week. There is a great guy at Orville's, where we just bought a brand-new dishwasher. Keith, he's a big fan of the Nuff Said podcast, and I told him I would do a shout-out because he gave us a couple bucks off, and I don't want to be one of those guys who'd be remiss. So, Keith, thanks for watching. We love the loyalty. Keep tuning in. Back to the Buffalo Bills.
All right.
See, if this was broadcast, I couldn't do that.
That was a great transition.
Well, I've been around for a few cups of coffee.
Yeah.
So, you're right. The Bills haven't beaten anybody.
No.
And that victory over Baltimore. Now, granted, Baltimore was better in the opener than they had been since then because of injuries, and they've got a little psychological thing going on in their head now, because especially Henry, the running back, who, you know, was Mr. Reliability until...
Can't hold on to the ball now.
No, and in key situations besides.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Bills, and I've talked about this earlier in the season, because, okay, so they dismantled the Jets, so they look like we thought they would look like. And then, only because of roughing the kicker penalties against both Miami and New Orleans, were they able to complete a drive that basically gave them the lead for good in the fourth quarter. So you take away those penalties, and God knows where this team stands. It's somewhat of a mystery, because they're basically the team from last year, although I think nobody's talking about the fact that Hollins is not in the receiving core, right. And he made some big, big long catches last year for this team.
I understand everybody eats. I get it. It's an interesting offensive philosophy, but these top teams all have a stud wide receiver, and this club does not. And Josh Allen has no – who's his favorite target now? Is it a tight end? And even Dalton Kincaid has been hurt. You look at it, they only beat New Orleans and Miami because of, A, the penalties you mentioned, and, B, because Josh Allen was so vastly superior to the quarterbacking on the other side of the ball. Some of these other teams now come up on the schedule. You're looking at tough defenses. You're looking at veteran quarterbacking. You got Baker Mayfield coming up. You got Aaron Rodgers coming up. You've got Patrick Mahomes coming up. You've got the Eagles with Jalen Hurts coming up. So that advantage isn't going to be as stark. Defensively, there's a lot of questions. It's interesting to me to see at the start of the year, when you think the Bills really are looking at a 12, 13, 14 win season, and all these questions have cropped up and injuries have cropped up, and all of a sudden now you wonder, where is this team headed? Frankly, you're wondering, are they going to win the AFC East?
Exactly.
Given the way the New England Patriots are playing right now.
I don't think the Bills wear the favorite role very well. I think they're And I don't think they're alone in this. I think a lot of teams love to be the underdog. They want to be overachievers. The Bills were favored before the season. They were favored in every single game on the schedule,
absolutely,
which is unbelievable. Now, the game against, and I don't want to go too far back, but obviously they lost. They lost to an Atlanta team that looked like world beaters, and then San Francisco, missing a number of defensive standouts, put a stranglehold on the Falcons' running game. And I mean, we know that the Bills' defense can't stop the run,
right.
But Josh Allen in that game was uncharacteristically off. He was inaccurate with many of his passes. He made some poor decisions. I read the article Kubiak writes for the Buffalo News, and he really took Allen to task last week about some of his poor decision making. And I really wondered, and you know, I didn't bother to go back and look at that first half, but. He took some blows in that game. He took some hits. We just, you know, we think of him as Iron Man, like nothing's going to hurt him. So you don't know, did he get shaken up in the first half? And, you know, from that point on, he wasn't quite thinking. I mean, we tend to overlook the fact that these guys, as they say, are in major car accidents every weekend. So the body sometimes pays back for, you know, for those. You don't have to have a concussion to be a little mixed up. I know I don't.
Well, here's something else that jumped out at me going into this season. And Lance Lysowski, our new beat writer, did a tremendous job in our season preview with this exact topic, and it's playing out. The number of turnovers the Bills committed last year was historically low.
Right.
The turnover ratio, that stat early in the season where they had won the turnover battle for, what, 26, 27 games in a row, that's not sustainable. And what you've started to see now in recent games, there's been some interceptions, there's been a couple fumbles, you know, the little jet sweeps from the wide receiver causing the one fumble. Terrible call, but let's not even go down that road. Joe Brady's got to figure that out. But there's been turnover issues now that the Bills didn't have at all last year. And they don't have a great margin here for error anymore. And if you suddenly start committing 2 and 3 turnovers in a game, you're going to see the difference. And even with Atlanta, I mean, Atlanta got beat by Carolina 30-0. You know, which is a little dark for this week, even though Bryce Young is out. So the turnover issue rears its head, and now the Bills are more like a normal team in that area than historically good at it. And that certainly brings them down as well off that favorite mantle.
You know, I think the one thing that really bugs me are these penalties. You know, right off the bat against the Falcons, they would have had a fumble recovery, but Rousseau was lined up offsides on the very first play from scrimmage.
Sloppy.
It's very sloppy. And I think, and I saw a little bit, I think, with the Eagles, I think when you're a heavy favorite for the playoffs, and, you know, Josh Allen has talked about this. I've heard Deion Dawkins talk about this. We just follow the process. We don't worry about the Super Bowl. We just take it one game at a time. They're playing teams that see the Bills on their schedule as their Super Bowl matchup. You know, teams like Atlanta, teams like New Orleans, they see the Bills as one of the top teams in the league, so they get really sky high to play against Buffalo, whereas Buffalo's just going in there basically trying not to lose, which oftentimes is a formula to lose.
And don't you think the Atlanta Falcons at home on Monday Night Football use that as a litmus, test kind of game for where they are as an organization right now, and they played like it.
Yeah, that's why I think if you're in Atlanta right now, you're lost to a really injured new 49ers team. Really has got you shaking your head wondering, who are we?
Right.
But that's the NFL. I mean, there's parity across the league. I started to mention the Eagles, I think, were also kind of suffering from, we're supposed to beat everybody, and then all of a sudden they didn't. So anyway, so now they've got Carolina. And this is a key game because after that, it's the suddenly Super Bowl looking again Kansas City Chiefs
Here they come.
Yeah, and they've straightened their act out.
Yep. That's the thing. You said to yourself at the start of the season, well, the Bills kind of mentally damaged the Ravens, and then the Ravens got injuries, and they're kind of out of it.
Right.
And the Chiefs didn't look like the Chiefs. And all of a sudden you say, oh, the Bills might have a three-game lead on the Chiefs and the Ravens, and here comes the number one seed. But then all of a sudden Indianapolis looks good, Denver looks good, Pittsburgh, the Chargers. But all of a sudden, here come those darn Chiefs again. And the last couple games especially, haven't Patrick Mahomes and company looked like Patrick Mahomes and company? And they do that a lot. They've had some rough starts to some seasons, and they just know how to peak through their season. And right now, having the Chiefs come to Highmark, that's a scary thought, because you look at the weapons that Mahomes still has, you look at the way they're playing overall on all sides of the ball, what phase of the game are the Bills playing well in right now? That would be a real question that's hard to answer. I can't really think of any.
The Bills are going to have to get healthy before they start to scare anybody. They just get too many injuries. We're going to shift gears to the team that I believe you earn a paycheck to cover, the Buffalo Sabres. Now, you were on, I think it was August, you said if this team starts out 0-3, Adams is out. They started out 0-3, but they've had some excuses to be 0-3. They had some injuries. They rebounded Monday night against Montreal. It was, what, 2-1 going into the third, or was it at the end of the second?
Yeah, and I mean, they had chances in that game. I did watch a few clips this morning. Obviously, I was in Toronto, didn't see it live. You know, you're in a one-goal game at the end, and the goalie's out, you're down a goal. And this is one of the things the Sabres have to learn and be able to do. They played terrible in Boston, but it was a one-goal game at the end. Couldn't get a point out of the game on the road. Not a great performance last night. I think the shots on goal were even, 31 apiece. One-goal game at the end, goalie out. Couldn't find a way to get a point on the road out of the game. Another regulation loss. So that's really a skill that a lot of teams develop in the NHL. Sometimes you see the good teams, they'll have 10, 11, 12 overtime losses, but they've managed to sneak out a point in a lot of games where they're not playing great instead of dropping regulation games. So the Sabres had played two pretty good games in a row at home, found their offense a little step back last night, but it's a huge week when you've got Detroit coming in with five straight wins, when you got a home-and-home with the Leafs. So, you know, there's no time in this Olympic year schedule being very compressed to ever fret about a game in the NHL this year. And there's no time to celebrate a game in the NHL because there are so many games in a short period.
Mike, is there any reason to expect more from this team this year?
There's reason. I mean, you've started to see the improvement in the special teams. You know, they went into last night's game leading the league on the penalty kill, and I think the number was fifth on the power play, which is a huge improvement from last year. So that's something that really can benefit them. The goaltending is a lot better. They just didn't score in the first three games, Bob, and that was why you had all the hysteria. It was 0-3, but if you had lost the opener to the Rangers 6-4, for example, how much better would people have felt about that game and that performance than getting shut out? Think about two goals in the first three games. And it really, right now, you look at it, Now you're through six games. Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch both have one goal apiece. They had 80 goals last year. So they're going to need their top guys to produce some more offense here. They're getting some secondary offense. Zach Benson has, I think it's six assists in the first three games he came off the injured list. But the injuries have hurt. And the biggest irony to me is we talked in the preseason all about, are they ever going to get any saves? It's the biggest problem in the team. Well, as it turns out, the goaltending's been the least amount of worries in the team, because probably in the first six games, who's the MVP of the club? It's absolutely Alex Lyon. Lukanen has played one period of hockey so far in the preseason. He's going to need time in Rochester before he comes back. And Alex Lyon has held the fort down here to give this team a chance to win.
You talked about, you know, Adams being in his job being in peril. Mm-hmm. At what point do you think, how bad does this team have to continue to play or to play for them to make a change? And would that even make a difference with the roster?
It wouldn't make a difference with the roster. If they're going badly, it could make a difference in the room. But right now, I think Adams's status, frankly, it might just be more of a talking point outside the organization than within. You know, he's got his contract. We know Terry Pegula loves him. The Jarmo Kekäläinen is there. The senior advisor could step right in. But right now, I think those two wins certainly took a lot of heat off. They were getting a tremendous amount of heat from the national media, especially. Teams lose three in a row in the NHL all the time. The problem is it's very difficult when you're this franchise to lose three in a row right off the start of the season.
Yeah.
That made it difficult for them. The one thing that's in their favor, Bob, is as we've seen now in the early season, the Atlantic Division has got a lot of problems. You know, the Florida Panthers and Boston both started 3-0 and both lost four in a row. The Sabres took care of the Panthers here the other day. Brady Tkachuk is out for a long time in Ottawa, and Ottawa's last in the league in defense. So there's a team that made the playoffs last year. It looks very bad in the early going. Tampa started 1-3-2, and we've waited for a couple of years for the Tampa Bay Lightning really to age out. They have a lot of mileage on their bodies from all their Stanley Cup runs. They haven't won a series since they made the final in 22. And the Florida Panthers, you know, I wrote this a couple times already. I think the Florida Panthers are a candidate to be a Stanley Cup champion that misses the playoffs the next season. It happened in 2015 with the LA Kings. It happened in 2007 with Carolina. They missed the playoffs. Sometimes it happens. The Florida Panthers have gone to three straight finals, and there is a lot of mileage on their bodies. They have a lot of injuries now. You look at it, it's almost like playing four seasons in three when you go to the Cup final 3 years in a row. And eventually that's going to catch up to you, and we've seen that early on. They've got a tremendous number of injuries, you know, starting with Matthew Tkachuk and Sasha Barkov, two massive holes in their lineup. And they have other injuries, too, and some of their guys who are playing just aren't playing that well. Bobrovsky in goal has been pretty good, fortunately for them. But I think the Panthers are going to, you know, struggle to get there. If they get in the playoffs, obviously they're very dangerous. They're going to struggle to get there.
How much fun is Lindy Ruff having on his return trip? I mean, Buffalo is his home, right? He lives here. And I'm sure when he took the job, he thought this would be a great way to walk off into the sunset and turn this franchise around. But I would look at him behind that bench, and I look at him in those post-game interviews. I mean, the look on his face has to be, you know, redundancy. I've been here before with this team.
Well, he certainly has the passion and the motivation to keep pushing forward. He understands what it would mean to get this team back in the playoffs. I mean, he gets frustrated, like everybody else does, when certain things happen. But you have seen the impact here. You saw the impact at the end of last season when they started to make some breakthroughs. You see this year, the work they did. You know, training camp was very positive, very upbeat, and then all of a sudden, whack, you're down 0-3 from the start of the season. They didn't expect that. But the special teams have played well, and you see the impact of some of the injured guys coming back. Benson coming back has been key. When they get Michael Kesslering in the lineup on defense, that should be another big addition. Jordan Greenway should be back within a week or so. That's certainly going to be one that's going to help them as well. And I think what's going to happen with this club is that they just have to figure out a way to bring more consistency, especially on the road. We're starting to see again, the last two home games have been very good. They were 14-3 in the last 17 at home last year. So they've started to develop a few things at KeyBank Center. Can you translate that and carry it on the road? And we need to see a little more depth in the forward lines. Some of the injuries hurt the third line. really struggled in Montreal last night, and you got a couple injuries there, you know, in the bottom six that they have to figure out.
So I detect some positivity from you, Michael.
Not positivity. I always, Bob, say I deal in reality. I don't deal in negativity. I don't deal in positivity. I deal in reality. And the reality is there are openings for this club because of the Atlantic Division, because of individual talent, because of, I think Lindy Ruff still is a positive, and the goaltending has changed the dynamic of this club. And that gives them a chance here, but you know, the games pile up quick. You can't pile up three or four losses. You want to pile up three or four wins at some point.
Right. Okay, we're shifting gears now to a team you just covered Monday night, the Toronto Blue Jays, who were down 3-2, and luckily the last two games were at home.
Yeah.
And Game 7, they were down 3-1. And, you know, maybe because I grew up in Buffalo, I don't expect teams to come back from a deficit late in the game. But they did. And so explain Monday night's experience for you, because you were in the locker room afterwards, and explain your veteran move, what you said before we started recording.
Well, you know, when there's a potential clinching game, that the beer and champagne are going to flow. It's a baseball tradition. And they open the doors to the media when those things are going on. Now, the Blue Jays, it's a first. I've covered like 18 World Series. I've never seen this before. The Blue Jays did not go in their clubhouse. Okay, Rogers Center is so big and so massive and has so many renovations to its service level. One of the things they did is they created an area essentially in the service level concourse, and it's a party room. And they got the smoke coming from the ceiling, the music playing, they got the disco ball spinning, and it was created with a party room in mind for celebrations after winning championships.
Wow.
And here they are in this massive hallway with all the media, and you can't avoid it. You can't avoid getting sprayed. So one of the things you do is, you're a veteran, Bob, you bring a garbage bag and put it in the press box. You bring a change of clothes. You bring another shirt. So I was pretty wet after that. So after, go back upstairs before you write your column, I just went in the bathroom and changed my shirt, and I had a dry shirt. I was good to go.
Were you alone in this process?
In the area of the press room, I was, but I know for a fact I wasn't last night. I know other people did that too. You know, a lot of people actually have rain slickers. You know, I know a lot of the female television reporters, that's what they do. They wear rain slickers in these celebrations so that they can go back and do their live right. shot quick and just shed the rain slicker. But it's a crazy thing, and the Blue Jays especially, because of the disco setting and the smoke. It was in the dark, basically, in the hallway. But you just did the job, did the interviews, and, you know, most of the players had their shirts off already. It was quite an insane scene, let's put it that way.
So it saves on the cleaning bill for the locker room.
It does. That's something I thought of right away. I'm like, boy, the clubhouse attendants are going to be happy with this, yeah. Because the actual clubhouse central doesn't get trashed. But you're right. It was a massive win for the organization. And remember, they were down in this series 2-0, and they won four of the last five games against Seattle, which I didn't think they could do. But they are the leading team in baseball this year for comeback victories. So they've done that kind of game all year. But to do that in Game 7 of the ALCS is a lot different than doing it in the middle of June. And you just were waiting for somebody to get the key hit, because you've seen so many guys do it before, and George Springer was the guy.
So the LA Dodgers, I think, are everybody's pick to win the series. They look awful good. You mentioned because there's a player on the Dodgers roster that Japan has a rooting interest for, that the credentials for the World Series is going to be, overwhelmingly, there's going to be a lot of reporters from Japan.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays have a shot in this series?
Yeah, I think the Blue Jays have a shot. Seattle, actually, has lost 12 games in a row to the Los Angeles Dodgers over the last 3 years. So Seattle would have really been up against it. The Blue Jays are a deep team. They have depth throughout their lineup. They have depth in their bullpen. They have depth in their starting rotation. They're probably, that's something other teams in the American League don't have. We saw the flaws the Yankees had in the division series. So they are most suited to give the Los Angeles Dodgers a run in the World Series. I think the Dodgers, like you say, are a heavy favorite to win this thing. But one thing I've seen in the past, teams that have a long time off tend to struggle early in the World Series, and a couple times I've covered it, they never get it back. The Dodgers are going to have a week off before Game 1 on Friday night, so you have to see how that impacts them going into this series. But you're right. tremendous lineup, tremendous starting pitching. Dave Roberts, the manager, don't forget, a Buffalo Baseball Hall of Famer, left his career in Buffalo as the all-time stolen base leader for the Bisons before he made the greatest stolen base in the history of baseball in Game 4 of the 2004 ALCS.
And as a Red Sox fan, I still appreciate that effort.
There you go.
Blue Jays have the home field advantage, right? The first two games will be in Toronto.
They finished one game ahead of the Dodgers, largely because Mason Fluharty, who had just come from the Bisons, struck out Ohtani with the bases loaded in the ninth inning when the teams met in August to give the Blue Jays a win in their last game of the three-game series. You flip the result of that game, and the Dodgers have home field.
It really, you know, that's until you started talking about it, I really didn't even click into the connection with the Bisons. But now, the Bisons weren't very good, but the parent team is very good, and that's really what it's all about.
And there was a reason for that. Addison Barger was the Bison's starting shortstop on opening day. Eric Lauer was the Bison's starting pitcher on opening day. They both became key players in Toronto this season. The Bisons had a lot of losses to Toronto roster-wise. They had some poor performances otherwise, too, and they had a lot of pitchers going up and down, relief pitchers going up and down, so they never really got in sync as a team this year. But boy, the Bisons created a lot of opportunity, and a lot of contributions were made in Toronto from guys who were in Buffalo this year. Normally, you see a guy, and in the Cleveland days, oh, he played here 3 years ago. Now look how good he's playing for the Cleveland Indians. This is a different story. Most of these guys, there were 15 guys in that ALCS roster who were in Buffalo this year, you know, and the rehab guys. I mean, Springer rehabbed here, Dalton Varsho, Shane Bieber rehabbed here, but that's all important. You know, I even asked John Schneider about that last night, the old theory, you know, it takes a village. This is an organizational win for the Blue Jays. So many of their guys came through their system. Guys had to come to Buffalo to rehab. And you look at Trey Savage, the kid pitcher, who started in A-ball, went through every level of the minor leagues in 1 year. He was in Buffalo a month ago. I said to him last night, you were in Buffalo pitching a month ago. After the game, the beer's flowing, everything's flowing. I said, does that feel like a year ago or 3 years ago? And he said, it feels like yesterday. He said, everything is going so fast here. I was just in Buffalo yesterday. It was September 10th was his last pitching outing in Buffalo. And here he is. He's now Trey Savage, one of the stars of the postseason. He's going to pitch either Game 1 or Game 2 of the World Series.
That's unbelievable.
It's just a story that's just beyond belief.
And I keep going back. It was talked about a number of years ago during COVID, but the improvements that the Blue Jays organization did for the Bisons here in town without it coming out of taxpayers' wallets.
Yeah, the Bisons got over 2 years of Blue Jays games here. They got a new infield. They got a new outfield. They got brand-new clubhouses. They got new bullpens out behind the fence, and people who go to the games see that giant brown building behind right field. That's a multi-million dollar batting and pitching lab. Full cages, full mounds, computers, cameras, everything. All of that was put in by the Blue Jays because they were going to play Major League games here.
Right.
And because standards of AAA ballparks needed to be upgraded as per orders of MLB, the Blue Jays took care of most of it. They have a Major League setup. So the other thing is when guys get sent an injury rehab, Bob, you know, George Springer was here for a week. These guys aren't crabbing about, oh my God, I got to go to the AAA club. No, because they have the setup and the facilities they need to get their work done in Buffalo, and it's just a very seamless transition for them.
If the bye week had been a week later, you would have seen plenty of photos of Josh Allen at the World Series game in Toronto, because both those two organizations have kind of adopted each other's players.
Josh has taken batting practice in the Rogers Center a couple times. Ernie Clement is from Rochester. Ernie Clement grew up a tremendous Bills and Sabres fan. When I see Ernie Clement in the clubhouse, he's always asking me about the Bills and the Sabres. You know, when he played for the Bisons in 2023, when Rick Jeanneret passed away, the Bisons painted RJ on the field behind home plate. The first game after that, Ernie Clement comes up to bat. He tapped his bat on the RJ before he went to bat that game because he was a Sabres fan.
Oh, that's cool.
And, you know, Ernie Clement is a huge Buffalo guy, and he resurrected his career in Buffalo. He had been in Oakland. He had been in Cleveland, had never really broken through, had a great year with the Bisons, got himself on the radar with the Toronto Blue Jays, and here he is now a postseason hero for the Blue Jays, going to the World Series, and he's a Major League regular.
Well, Michael, I'm going to wrap this up. I know you've got another meeting to go to, and I want to thank you with your schedule. I mean, just think, folks, 4 a.m., he gets to bed. He's here at Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant early on a Tuesday morning, kind of early.
Nah.
Early if you went to bed at 4. And you can, you know, take some spaghetti parm on the road and get you some carbs to get back into shape. And so you're covering the series, you're covering the Sabres. The news isn't going to make you cover the Bills this weekend, too.
Not this weekend. I got a good doubleheader plan, though, the series and the Sabres in Toronto. I'm going to be going back and forth Saturday night looking to get a column, kind of a day in the life of Toronto. It should be crazy. I'm looking forward to that.
Drive carefully.
All right.
Mike Carrington from the Buffalo News. Mike, thanks so much for coming in. You know what? And enjoy your Halloween. Maybe you can wear a Toronto Blue Jays hat and a Sabres jersey and just give out some good candy to the kids. Mike Carrington from the Buffalo News. That's going to take care of Nuff Said. Next episode, we have the famous Howard Simon is going to come in. And, well, Howard loves the spaghetti parm here, so it's not hard getting him here at Chef's. We'll see you on the next episode. Have yourselves a good night and a much better tomorrow.